Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. This guy right here is your host, Mike.
Hello.
And joining Mike today are Craig.
Hello.
And Dave.
Hello, Internet.
And I'm Tori. Hello, Internet. So we start every week with good thing. Craig, do us a thing.
I'm just going to keep it simple. Bring back a classic, because I was just talking to Mike about this before we recorded. But guys, Vampire Survivors is $3. Just go buy it.
Like, again?
Yes. Yeah, it is $3. I have sunk nearly 50 hours into it. It is the best $3 I have spent on Steam. And yeah, they just keep adding so much to
it. If you already own it, buy another copy and give it to someone.
Yeah. So, in case we didn't say it before you missed it, Vampire Survivors is a wave survival game that is based on, like, Castlevania themes and items and weapons and things like that. You collect XP, which, by leveling up, lets you either pick a weapon or an accessory or upgrade your current weapons and accessories. The neat thing is that certain weapons and certain accessories combine to be super awesome. And you just need to survive right now for 30 minutes of the maps. But there's stuff to find, new characters to find, new items that you can find in the actual stages that you play. You unlock new stages, more challenges, things like that. It's a lot of fun. I just caught up recently, and I'm like, I mean, I'm still essentially waiting like for each update, but it is worth $3 now. It is a fun game, so go play.
So you survive, but do you have vampires?
Hopefully not.
That's actually kind of an ongoing theme of the game, is you're trying to find a vampire. So far, I haven't found one. Craig may have found one, but I haven't.
you get your vampire is in another coffin like that.
Isn't this like one of them puzzle, like snood games or something?
I don't know what that means.
You know, like snood.
It's super duper not a puzzle game. There's zero puzzling.
It is a survival game. Like tower defense, only you get to move.
So it's Vampire Survivor. Are you a vampire trying to survive, or are you trying to survive attacks from vampires?
You're kind of a Castlevania character with Castlevania weapons, and there are Castlevania style enemies. But As I said, so far I have not found a vampire. But I don't have nearly as much stuff unlocked as Craig.
But were this a vampire, the friends you made along the way?
It could be. Honestly, I have no idea. Like, they're adding lore stuff.
I thought Vampire Survivor meant that, like, you had a brother or some family member who was a vampire, and they died, and you survived them.
No.
You don't know that. That could be the case. You can't definitively say no to that. It could be. We don't have that lore yet.
My Uncle Vladimir mysteriously passed away and left me a mansion in his will.
Now I'm like Survivor Island, except it's vampires.
Vampires can't be islands. Only mans can be islands. Ask T.S. Eliot.
Anyway, that's it. Go buy it, guys.
Right, Tori, that's not the right guy.
In The Incredibles, the first one, the island that Mr. Incredible goes to is called Nomanasan Island.
Okay, Dave.
John
what's your
Don.
Good thing? That sounds right. Yep.
My good thing this week. This is like this is a totally Philadelphia, United States thing, and I doubt anybody's gonna care about this other than Craig and me, and perhaps my brother. Oh man,
there could be other people from Philadelphia that listen to this. I don't know. The stats
Nobody
don't
else.
Break down by state; it's by country.
Nobody else lives in Philly. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh well.
What is it? I want to know.
My good thing this week is the commentator duo Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson. They're the voice of the Phillies on the radio, the Philadelphia Phillies baseball team. They're better than anyone that I've ever seen announce games on TV. And
I say Harry Callis is a staple.
Oh, Harry Callis. Yeah, well, Harry Callis, is another well-known, excellent commentator. Actually, the voice of Harry Callis was in Little Monsters, even though Little Monsters doesn't take place in Philadelphia.
Excuse me, I need to break in here with Bob Uecker, who you may know from the Major League films, has been announcing for the Milwaukee Brewers for, like, decades until he retired or passed away or both. I honestly don't know what he's up to or not up to these days, but yeah.
Yeah, so Harry Callis was great, but Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson are awesome, too. And, yeah, Larry Anderson, he always tells it like it is, and he's always sarcastic. He always wants to go home by the sixth inning. He's basically me in baseball commentary form. Like, when I'm commentating a Link to the Past randomizer, and it's like an hour and a half in, I'm like, all right, are we wrapping this up, guys? Yeah, I told you no one else would have anything to say about it. Not even Craig had anything to say about it.
That's because I don't watch baseball.
Right, they're on the radio.
I don't listen to baseball.
You can't listen to baseball. It's a sport. You gotta watch it.
No, I've done my share. It's just, I don't actually typically listen to any radio or watch any TV, which is how I'm so out of tune with anything.
I'd beg to differ. I think baseball can be even better to listen to on the radio than actually watch.
Well, yeah, there's less nothing going on.
With a couple of good commentators. Absolutely.
All right. Tori, what's your good thing?
No, it's Mike's turn.
No, I think Dave had it right. Tori, what's your good thing?
Oh, okay. My good thing this week is the way Craig pronounces accessories. Can you say it again, Craig?
Accessories? Wait, what is the difference? I don't understand.
There's a hard C in there that you're missing.
Oh, I don't do accessory.
Yes, you do.
Accessory to murder of the English.
Yes, you are.
Accessory. Let me accessory you a question.
Is that actually your good thing, man? Why did I?
No, but I've done forgot what it was. Okay, no, I remember now. There is a book. It's called I Didn't a Thing Today. It's an anti-productivity manifesto, I guess. And it's delightful, and it's full of quotes, including they quote Brandon Sanderson in Wade. But it's just a bunch of, you know, why are you pushing yourself so hard? Maybe settle down a little bit. Maybe enjoy life.
From this guy.
So it's good. I like it.
Oh, Tori, side note, I bought the Ada Lovelace book, The Little People, Big Dreams.
Oh, yeah, I love those. Yeah. So don't know, that's a series of board books. And they also have like not quite chapter books on the same topics. And they're little bitty biographies in there.
We got it for unrelated reasons, you guys know, but it was relevant for us to pick up that. And there's a couple other Ada Lovelace that I had to get when my daughter's.
Yeah, we should make a list.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Mike, what's your good thing?
My good thing, this Oxygen Not Included got big DLC-sized free update called Fast Friends that includes some new critter morphs and some performance updates. And some other stuff, like new outfits, the new outfits. But specifically, I want to talk about one of the new critter morphs, which solves an exploit that I was very happy to take advantage of. So there's a critter that you can farm called a shove vole. The way you farm these things, one of the ways you can farm these, rather, is you stick them into a room. You have your rancher go and groom them regularly, and you never feed them. And they lay an egg before they die. When they die, they drop a ton of meat. Like, literally, actually, several tons of meat. Which is just a huge amount of food for no, like, input. Like, you don't have to feed them. It's free food. But now, unless you keep them at, like, a very high temperature, there's a 2% chance, and keeping them at the high temperature makes the chance go higher, not lower. There's a 2% chance for every egg they lay, that it will be this new morph, which doesn't start with enough calories to live long enough to lay an egg if you don't feed. Which means that you can still exploit the shove voles, you just can't do it forever. Which I thought was like just a very clever fix to an exploit that they didn't necessarily intend.
Well, that's good. Is it actual features that have been updated or just
bug fixes? It's a DLC-sized update. Like, they're calling it a DLC. It's free.
Yeah.
I mean, just from that little description, it sounds like animal abuse, the video game.
No. There's lots more abuse besides just animals.
Okay, that's better then.
If you're not familiar, Oxygen Not Included is a it's a colony crafter type game a la, I guess it would fit in the same world as RimWorld, that sort of thing, but the view and everything is different. The idea is that you have your colony of people in, I guess, a cavern or something like that, and Oxygen asteroid. Is not included. Oh, and it's an asteroid.
Yep, you're out in
space. I've never played it myself. I have watched people play it.
I would describe it as a civil engineering game, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're mining the asteroids, and you have to figure out how to, you know, get oxygen and resource to your people, make sure they sleep, and can go to the bathroom, and breathe. And I know it does a lot in terms of gases and things like that, like how it's modeling that sort of thing, that you sort of have to take that into account, so that way you can make sure your people can breathe.
Yes, and because it runs on computers and doesn't melt them, they take some liberty, which are exploitable. Which about half the fun for me, just figuring out ways to manipulate things because of the way they've fudged things. So, like, each square can only have one type of thing in it. So it's either one gas or one liquid or one solid taking up that square. So in that square, you can have either oxygen or hydrogen or carbon dioxide, etc. You can't have, like, a combination of things. So, yeah. Manipulating that is one of the cool ways you can exploit things. Anyway, that's me. That's my good thing.
Oh, okay. So, Dave, you read some chapters.
Yeah, you'll have to remind me which ones.
Oh, heck if I know.
Some interludes, I think.
The interludes, yeah. Of the chapter 89.
Interlude
89.
I-7. Okay, let's go. Yeah, I-7. It's on my notes. They're 89. All right, so interludes, this is the end of part 3, I think, into part 4. So interlude 7 is called Envoy. Ahem. Envoy form. Odium needs an envoy. Fenley, the envoy. Parshman get envoyed. Rhythm of excitement. Fenley rememvoys something. Sorry I was acting less Alethi, your rightfulness. Envoy spren.
Does this interlude have something to do with mining? I feel like it has something to do with mining.
Someone's been playing too much Stardew Valley lately.
Mining for envoy.
Envelope. Or envelope, if you will. That's weird. I say envoy, but I say envelope. I wonder if they're, like, the same word.
So you're saying I should pronounce it envelope.
How would you pronounce envelope?
Envelope.
Yeah, that one really only has one option.
Like, an envelope envelops a letter.
I mean, you could do that Greek ending, and then it's envelope-y.
I like that one.
Like Penelope. And that's the end of I-7.
Penelope.
Penelope. Penelope the envoy spren.
Penelope.
Can you tell us what actually happened this chapter?
Yeah, Venli is taking on envoy form because Odium needs an envoy. And then she goes and envoys some Parshman. And rhythm of excitement. I don't even know why I wrote that. It's a lot of rhythms. And then, you know, she's kind of like, all these slaves are still acting like their captors. Like, I think one of them even has a safe hand sleeve. And she calls Venli your brightfulness or brightness or something like that. And other things. And she's like, act more like what I think a Parshandi is supposed to act like.
So she was attuning the old rhythm, not the new ones of power. That could be why you wrote Rhythm of Excitement.
Yeah, she accidentally attunes one of the old rhythms.
Not like one Rhythm of Derision rhythms. Or whatever. They always have a negative kind of, like, all the quote-unquote new rhythms have a negative type to it. The
rhythms of power. Anything else for I-7?
Actually, yeah, I have a question for you. How would it work for an emotional allomancer to use their power on a singer?
What do you mean? Singers aren't invested?
What? What does that have to do with him?
I mean, you know how you can't use emotional allomancy on this ska because they're, like, dead inside?
No,
except that the Lord Ruler was doing it all the time through, like, the radio towers.
And Breeze was doing it all the time? Like, it doesn't matter.
Emotional allomancy. I thought you said emotional scones. So, you think, like, that maybe they would audibly hear a different rhythm?
Or they'd, like, be attuned to a rhythm and, like, not know why.
Interesting. Yeah. Or if you're a dampenator, then, you know, hey, I was listening to that. What happened to the radio station?
Yeah, just suddenly find yourself not attuned to anything for the first time in your whole life.
Oh, man. Hoyt should try that sometime just to see what happens.
Knowing Hoyt, he probably has done something like that just to see what happened.
Yeah, he's a scientific mind.
No. It's just because he's...
Just like scientific mind.
Moving on.
Interlude 8. Meme. Laundry art. Does this go against what Hoyt say about art? You know, because meme is like, oh, laundry is art. But Hoyt says that art can't be art unless it's meaningless and serves no function. So is there a part, like someone's either wrong or like, is there a part of laundry that's art? But it seems really functional because she's talking about how not to ruin clothes as you clean them and how to get out tough stains and stuff. I mean, maybe we should just not listen to what Hoyt says.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to go.
All right. So where did Mrazy get so much blood? From ghosts? Who are you? I don't think that's what Shang Tsung meant by art of war. Mrazy loves that Pom hates art. Oil sworn just sounds like some pretentious Vaden way of saying painter. Ancient Pom Pom is fired. Take it, Craig.
Oil sworn was the very famous artist that Shallan's family had a book of his works that Shallan like learned from.
Oh, is that someone's name?
Yeah. Dandos the Oil Sworn, something like that.
Oliver Sworn?
Yep, you got it.
Anyway, I didn't read what the medium chapters again this week.
What did he paint in, you think? Did finger paints, do pastels, color pencils, ink, acrylic paint? What do you think?
Based on what we've seen, use Shallan to paint stuff for him. For 300 years charcoal.
I'm going to go with oil painting.
What about charcoal? That's a thing. That's like pencils, basically, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, and...
Dandus, the oil sworn, famous charcoal artist.
Just so you know, Dave, Bob Ross does oil painting. His style is specifically wet on wet.
Yeah, I knew it was wet on wet. I didn't know that it was oil, necessarily. So maybe this is just Bob Ross. Maybe it's actually the guy.
I'm very on board with just assuming Dandos the Oil Sworn was Roshar and Bob Ross.
Yeah. Do you think that Dalinar had visions of him painting happy little trees and
happy
feeding
little
squirrels?
Sprint. I was going to say happy little sprint.
Happy little sprint. Nice. Or Stick. You think he ever drew a picture of Stick? Well, Stick looks lonely there. Let's give him a little friend.
Yes, I see it.
And his little friend is trying to convince him to be fire?
Did Bob Ross ever draw fire? Not counting the sun.
I don't, but I have
drawn like storms and rain and maybe even lightning sometimes.
Yeah, I haven't gone through like an exhaustive Ross forever.
I don't think he's done rain, but he has done like waves and he has, you know, mimicked the water cascading in that fashion. But usually it's their still scenes. I can't think of him painting fire in one of the episodes.
Very hard to animate with oil wet on wet.
No.
I mean...
Just gotta let your imagination fly, man.
Oh, yeah. And we don't... Then just don't make any mistakes. Like Bob Ross says, you gotta be perfect.
Yes. Yes, he does say that. Except...
he does not say
that. He does not say that.
No, Bob Ross...
He's like, there's no mistakes, Sergeant.
Bob Ross very famously said, gotta do secret stuff sometime.
Oh, maybe it's Kaladin, then.
Hey, Dave, what actually happened in this chapter?
There's a meme. She's the lady that cleans Mrazy's clothes, and he has all the ghost blood on his clothes, so she has a lot of tough stains to get out, and he gives her a bonus at the end of the chapter. And then some lady who Mrazy seems to think is very old goes into his room while they're delivering clothes. She's like meme's apprentice. And then this young-looking old lady, Pom, she just goes and slashes some art. Half price. Cut down. Art of war.
All right. Who is Pom? You should have more than enough information to figure this out.
Oh, I know that. That's easy. Pom's a herald.
Which one?
The one that hates art.
I know. Which one is that?
The one that Shallan takes after, obviously.
You are actually closer than you think.
Shallan's
namesake is Shalash.
Because she slashes the art with a dagger.
She slashes the art. That's how you can remember who it is.
And the art was splashed onto the page and shalash, slash to splash.
Yes. Yeah, so shalash has been destroying her.
And we should refer to her as Ash moving forward, just to.
Because she fell from the sky.
Yep.
I see.
No, there are actual memes of that. Like, once these books came out, people started doing that. And...
Well, the Heralds were never really in the sky, except maybe the Windrunners. Well, I mean, I guess there's only one Windrunner Herald, but, you know.
I mean, there's two of them that had access to flight power.
Oh, there's also Skybreakers. They might have something to do with the sky.
I mean, that is two, Skybreakers and Windrunners. Yeah.
Do Skybreakers have access to the wind surge?
Skybreakers have, of the gravitation stuff. Specifically gravitation, whereas adhesion is shared between Windrunners and Bondsmen.
Bond James. So, yeah. And then Meme gets a raise, but she's going to have to find a new assistant. All right. Interlude 9. True labor begins. Big time in the big city. What? Oh, this is a Venli interlude. And, you know, she's like, she's like the kid in the car that says, are we there yet? And then the mom turns around. She's like, we're still in the driveway. Why would you ask that right now?
I have to pee.
Yeah. And that's why she has the little spren in her backpack. Is this maybe a spren that was trying to bond with Esh and I? And now she's like, well, I guess I'll try Venli now. We'll see what happens now.
Yep.
But the void spren or the return, not the return, the evil bug returned. They're like trying to probably kill this spren. And Venli gave a name to this spren, but I didn't like the name, so I didn't write it down.
But rude.
It's Timber.
Amber, that's right.
Timber.
But Timber.
It actually means something in music.
It's, Jeffrey Timbre.
It's like the sound ness.
The character or quality of a musical sound or voice.
Sound character, yeah.
As distinct voice. From its pitch and intensity. So it's...
Well, yeah, it's kind of like a trumpet sounds different from a violin. Even if you play the exact same note at the same frequency and amplitude, like, they sound different because they have different timbres.
So it's the sounding.
Yeah, but I believe timbre is also an acceptable pronunciation. But I think it's probably, well, a lot of stuff that I hate how it's pronounced is French, but this one's music, so it's probably Italian. I was looking at my note for the next interlude. Let me know when you want to hear it.
I want to hear it right now.
All right. Interlude 10. Schiller. Haagen-Dazs execution. you heard it here first, folks, on the Cosmere Deep Dive podcast 10 years after you read it in Oathbringer.
All right. What actually happened this chapter?
Some NPC gets put to death, and he's like, I'll take the wrestling the pig execution method, please. And then the pig is like a giant sea monster or something. But they just call it the hog.
They should have been more clear when they said the hog.
I mean, in fairness, the general, the Herdazian general has also done this and he got out. He was fine.
True, but he's not.
Yep.
I think actually
No, he's Herdazian.
I think the punishment, the hog punishment, is actually you have to stand in Elwynn Forest and wait for Hogger to spawn and kill him for a quest. But then, like, right before you get up to him, like, some hunter tags him from, like, across the screen. And, like, you just have to sit there, like, hundreds and hundreds of times with other people coming up and tagging him, and no one will join your party until you're not allowed to eat, until you starve to death. So it's obviously the longest and most torturous of executions.
Yep, totally tracks.
I mean, that was my World of Warcraft experience.
Anyone else? Anyone have anything to say about Shalair? He's basically just this pompous late eyes dude. He's like the reason that Moesh hates late eyes guys so much.
Did the book mention who he was working with? Shalair?
Yeah.
The name. Well,
you want to tell? You want to tell our audience?
I want you to say, because I don't know what the book said. I know who it is.
Yeah. I mean, he worked for Amaram, I guess. That's...
Okay. Yes.
Is that all you wanted to say?
Yeah, no, that's all I wanted to say. I don't know what the book said, if you know, Lethe.
No, he's like, Amaram is way more sophisticated than this Herdazian Captain Lord General man.
And did he twirl his evil mustache at that point?
He doesn't have a mustache. Lethe aren't allowed to have mustaches.
But
a mustache is a slave brand.
Sure.
That's why Kaladin has a mustache, and that's why Moash shaved, because he got a shard blade. He used the shard blade to shave his mustache.
Now we're veering into very good kind territory, so let's move on.
This is a kind of territory. Interlude 11, her reward. Any questions about Interlude 11?
Yes.
Yeah, well, what are they? You're going to have to be more specific. We're trying to explain a book here.
What? That's my question.
Yeah, that's what. It's like, it's Venli, and she's like, well, this is what I get for summoning the old gods. The old gods came. Yeah.
I read this earlier today, and I don't remember this interlude.
It's less than 2 pages, maybe even less than 1 page. I don't remember.
This is just the one where she tells Timbre that she has that. Timbre.
Oh, man.
Is he like a rap star?
That sounds like a rapper name, Timbre. I feel like I've read across this rapper in a crossword puzzle.
And Odium, like, appears briefly and is like, wow, powerful. And she's like, I can't do this.
And that's the end of this week's interlude. Time for spoiling the next 2 chapters.
Spoilers for chapter 88.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start part 4, which is called Defy Sing Beginnings, which is like the most anime title I've ever heard in a Brandon Sanderson book. Like, this is actually an anime episode.
This is so anime. Defy Sing Beginnings.
I'm pretty sure I saw this episode of Ranma Half.
And then they have a different opening because you have to change the opening every part of the book.
Yeah, so we have all the point of view characters, and that's a lot of names. Allow me to read them off to you. Adolin, Shallan, Dreamy Kaladin, Dalinar, Nivani, Szeth, Tyravangian, Venli.
That is a Hoyt lot of names.
Hoyt is suspiciously missing.
No, Hoyt always gets the end cap, so you know he's going to be at the end of part 5.
Yep. Oh, there's 5 parts? Okay.
There's always 5 parts.
What? One time there were 6 parts.
Was there actually?
And now there's 4 to balance it out.
Well, of a section, had part 6.
No. Sorry. For Stormlight Archives, there's always
16.
Like, there's a certain
vials on my belt.
That Sanderson is.
Pattern! There's a certain pattern, and his name is Spren.
Sanderson is strictly following from the archive, and that each book has 5 different parts. They have the interludes mixed in between them. Each book has certain flashbacks for one particular character. And this happens to be Dalinar's book. He gets the flashbacks.
Okay, but.
So, who do you guys think's going to be flashed back in Rhythm of War?
I think it's going to be Dreamy Kaladin again. I think we're getting more of him.
You know, technically, we can tell Dave, because we knew at this time, because this is not hidden knowledge. Should we tell him?
Ish and I.
Yeah, Ish and I.
She dead.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
She is dead.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
Ish and I like her better than Venli.
Do you want to know book 5? Are we allowed to tell Dave?
Silfrenna.
You wish.
I mean, we kind of know all of them, theoretically. Like, this information could change, but we kind of have all of that information available to us. Like,
I only know Yasna, the back half as much. Yasna is one of them in the future.
But what if she dies? Oh, that's why they have Ish and I, to prove that there can be dead people flashbacks.
So, book 5 is Szeth, and then in the back half, I think we have, correct me if I'm wrong, Renarin, Haln, Yasna, and 2 others that I don't know.
Ash.
Oh, Ash gets one? Okay.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to remember who the other one is supposed to be, and I'm blanking. But Yasna is supposed to be book 10.
Oh, here, I pulled it up. Lift.
That's right.
The first one.
She doesn't have a roots or a past.
Lift, Renarin, Ash, Taln, and Yasna. Now, keep in mind, the order is subject to change. In fact, when Brandon Sanderson was writing Oathbringer, he was trying to decide if he wanted to do Szeth's flashbacks or if he wanted to do Dalinar's. And ultimately, he decided this would be Dalinar's book and Szeth would book 5.
But Szeth, there was the original Dave.
There was sort of like a which way is he going to go? And that's the to-do.
And that's the end of the page between Interlude 11 and Chapter 88.
Yeah.
Chapter 88. Voices. Sad days. Renarin likes fire. Who could deny Adolin? A who? This is a story about Hal Dalinar gets drunk with the local homeless people. And Adolin's like, I have my first duel tomorrow, Dad. And Dad's like, you're in uniform, son. And Adolin says, I have my first duel tomorrow, sir. Do you want to watch it? And he says, soldier, I'd be proud and honored to watch your duel. And Renarin's there burning incense, but Dalinar hates fire because that's how the people of the basin killed his wife, as the story goes. And they set fire to it by accident, according to legend. And he gets drunk, and then Elokar, who's got to be like at least 6 or 7 by now, he's like,
Elokar?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Adolin's like, old enough to duel, and they're a lethe, so he's probably 5.
Elokar's old. It's
fine. So this is like a year before Gavilar dies. So if Gav is not yet born, Gav is like they probably gonna be conceived like in the next week or so.
Okay, hold on a second. So this is 8 years ago. Adolin is like what, 16 at this point?
I thought it said 14 or 15, but yeah, right in there.
Okay, like 15. And Elokar is 3 years older than Adolin. Elokar would be like 18.
9.
Okay.
I'm telling you, if Adolin's having his first duel, he's 5 years old. Right? Because they're a lethe and they start people dueling young.
Guys, Dave did
that's
the
like dueling for them is basically kindergarten.
Yeah, basically.
All right, so
he was born holding a sword, and they have their first duel when they're 5.
So what you're saying is, I don't even want to go there. Gavilar is sure. I remember seeing. Okay, it's I forget how many years ago, but I remember reading the number of years ago, and I'm like, oh, this is like a year before Gavilar dies. And Elokar, I'm sorry, is probably close to siring a son. So he's like, I'm worried about Uncle Dalinar. And then Adolin's like, how dare you call my dad a drunk? You have no idea what he's done for this kingdom. Okay, but he does have a problem, Uncle Gavilar. Can we help him? And then Dalinar's like he got all drunk to forget about his horrible, horrible past. And then he accidentally goes to the wrong bedroom and overhears this conversation and remembers his horrible, horrible past. So, like, kind of just wasted a night of drinking, really.
Is a night of drinking ever really...
Is it ever not wasted?
Depends on if you get wasted.
Dave.
It me.
Who is Dalinar's drinking companion? You might be able to figure this one out.
A who?
Yeah, but who's that?
A world hopper.
Ooh, what other...
I'd be able to...
What other ancient... ones have we heard from in this very recording?
Nail?
It's not Nail.
The town?
It is not town. Town is, at this point in time, he's busy holding off all the evil dudes.
I do. Ahu was kind of like, Ahu was aware, I thought maybe he was touched by the Night Watcher and that's why he was kind of crazy. So probably one of the heralds then. Oh, it's Ehumumu Hakiaki Ayalunamor, the famed Rock Eater Herald.
So are we just going to tell Dave or just...
No. No, we don't. We don't tell him. We let him guess.
Okay.
I did. Now it's time to tell me.
You'll know who it is by the end of the book.
Okay. Oh, is it the Edge Dancer? Guybreaker? No.
Windrunner? You're just going to get... There's 10 of them.
Oh, yeah, maybe. It's probably the guy that gave his sword to Seth. Where his sword Seth has.
He's not a Shin Elder.
I mean, he's the Windrunner.
Okay, but Seth was given his sword by the Shin Elders.
Because he's a truthless.
Moving
and that's
on.
The end of chapter 88. Chapter 89. Dang Nation. Whoever this blue girl is, she sounds pretty smart. Azure is a world hopper?
Hold up. Didn't read it all.
Yeah, you have more in these notes, sir.
Oh,
he's trying
I'm sorry.
To hide it. I see it.
I've discovered more notes in the bullet points. Hang on. Whoever this blue girl is, she sounds pretty smart. Ellipsis. And it's... beautiful and perfect in every way.
Yeah, so Dave put a little Mary Poppins. Practically perfect in every way.
No, it's
come on,
Frenna.
Son.
Mary it's still Poppins. Frenna. It's not. Is Mary Poppins a sprint?
Maybe.
All right.
I mean, you know what? I
think we can make a case that Mary Poppins is actually Sprint.
I think
look
she's
at how she acts.
I think she's intended to be a witch in the movie,
but
she doesn't
eat
the kids.
We could say it's a Sprint.
Do you have any idea how long it took me to put together that Mary Poppins was supposed to be a witch?
I didn't even think about it until now, actually. So
yeah, I was in my
30s. This is news to me.
I still don't believe it.
Anyway, you can keep going now.
Azure is a world hopper, maybe. The Claw. Well, she said she'd try not to kill them. Dead Shield Raft. Broody Kaladin. Houseboat. Adolin is confused for the first time in his life.
Yep.
The other times he didn't know what was going on, but he knew he didn't know what was going on. Yeah, this, or he thought he knew what was going on. So, like, this is the first time he's just, like, confused. And knows he doesn't know whether or not he knows what's going on. I will protect those if only they would just freaking listen. Azure is Hoid? That's three question marks, because I don't know, I just threw it out there. King Adolin.
Dave, not everyone who has gray/white hair is Hoid.
Uh-huh. It's what you told me. You said if someone has white hair, that's the signature of Hoid.
And also his nose, I think. He has a pointy nose.
His hooked nose, like Count Olaf. Yeah. So, I don't know if Azure's a world hopper. She says something like, oh, I came through Shadesmar when I came to your land, but I had guides back then or something, which, like, maybe she actually just used Shadesmar to get from one end of Roshar to the other. Wait a minute. So, if Shadesmar is the opposite of the material realm, and so, like, land is beads and water is solid land.
Yep.
Then, like, could people actually use Shadesmar to go from one planet to another? I mean, I guess we literally have seen Kelsier do this. But, like, wouldn't space be matter? Or does it not matter?
No. So that's the trick. Because people don't think a lot about the distance between planets. It essentially is non-existent in the cognitive realm. So the lands are connected in the cognitive realm. You can go from one to the other.
Connected? Yeah, okay. It makes sense. Because, like, in space, there isn't matter, so there wouldn't be any souls to be in the way.
The big question you should have is if there's a people that actually develop space flight and are traveling between planets, does that actually create something in the cognitive realm to reflect the distant travel?
Celestial bodies like asteroids and meteors and things that come close to planets or between planets.
People
they
don't think about
exist.
Those.
Yeah, they, right.
Oh, but do they think about themselves?
So the problem is we haven't had any spacefaring or even people that even care about space in general. Like, we haven't seen any astronomers on anything. I mean, I guess this is the closest because we have the dudes that are looking at the weather patterns, but that's the thing. They're looking at the weather and predicting the high storm. They don't really care about space. So,
I mean, we will have had some space folk.
Eventually, yes.
The ones above.
Yep.
But oh, like from the Apache Island planet.
Yeah.
But we don't know because that was the last book, chronologically speaking, the last story in the Cosmere. So we don't know what effect that has had on the cognitive realm.
They could even be Skadrians.
They probably are Skadrians. Probably yeah, from Era 4. But we
guess,
don't
Dave.
Know for certain.
Yep,
okay.
Knew it. Just like I know who Ehu is.
So yep. I've been
Wait
asking
a minute.
Dave.
I know who Ehu is. He's from Sel. That's a Selish name.
All right. So I've been asking.
I was saying we also have heralds that have like really super duper long names that get shortened to three or four letters. So it could be that. Aharatium.
Wait, what is Mike going to say?
Mike tried three times and he's done.
I only heard you try once, to be fair. And then I gave you time and you didn't say anything, so I kept talking. Maybe your mic didn't cut in that time. But the recording will vilify me because the local recording picks up everything on Mike's mic. All right, Mike, what did you want to ask me?
Okay, I've been asking you to try to guess at stuff throughout all these. What's up with Azure?
Okay, so Azure, I'm going to guess, is a world hopper. Oh, wait. Maybe she's a Lantrian because she has silver hair. That makes perfect sense. Don't they have silver hair? Did I say Skadrian or a Lantrian?
You just said a Lantrian.
Yeah, that's my guess, that she's a Lantrian.
I'm just going to leave it up to Mike to determine what should say. He's the keeper of the spoiler.
Well, Tori's the host this week, so I think it's time for her to lead us into spoiler time.
Okay, so did Dave have anything else to say?
Whoa. We didn't actually talk about this chapter. I was meaning, I don't know if we're going to tell anything about Azure to Dave.
All right, we'll talk about it, Craig.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Mike needs to determine if we want to tell you anything, but I don't think we do. So you just get the wait and see and figure it out.
Wait and find out. Waifu.
I will say it is not Hoid. I will give you that. I will give you that cookie. Azure is not Hoid.
But is Hoid Azure?
Hoid is not Azure either.
Maybe she's in that group that Kelsier met. The Eyrie. She an Eyrie? She could be an Eyrie. They're Elantrian, right? Or they're Selish, at least. Or they were on Sel. I don't remember.
I will say that you actually missed a lot of clues up to this point, so...
She has a scar on her face, so obviously...
I'm not talking about physical. You should pay more attention to how she talks.
Wait, is it a character I've met before? Is it Sazed?
It is a character you've met before.
Is it the character from the interlude and she was looking for Hoid?
Ehu was also a character you've met before.
No one's gonna guess that. Ehu, the only person that Ehu reminds me of is like the goofy guy from the 11th Metal.
A weird, like, old mentor crazy dude?
Yeah, that guy. Bannon. Probably not that guy, though. Be pretty un-
All right, do you want to tell us what else happens in Chapter 89?
Well, let's see. Azure's like a blue color, so maybe she's Sylphrena. Or, didn't Blushweaver die about... I mean, all the return died at one point. Can't. Vin's dead. Yasna's dead. So Vina died once.
Yasna's dead, and then she's alive again.
But Vin's double dead, so completely off the table.
Vin is confirmed dead. We actually see her die.
Twice.
All realms. And yes, in both.
Serene probably didn't die.
I mean, we don't know how far this takes place in time relation to Elantra's book.
The other thing is that Azure seems to have some powers of, like, illusion or something. Yeah. So I'm trying to think what... Maybe she's, like, one of them... She's one of them Warbreaker sisters. That could be it. I mean, Though she wouldn't be the first Warbreaker character in this book.
You sure about that?
Illusion-y powers. Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm not. Because maybe she was in this book before Nightblood even was. I didn't notice.
How do you even know Nightblood is in this book?
Not this book, but I mean, I'm counting Edgedancer as part of this book. Edgedancer is like chapter -1 of this book. And Edgedancer and Nightblood likes Lift. So Nightblood's all right in my book. Who else does exist? Ben, she probably exists.
So it sounds like we need a Dave theory. You list all these people, and then you figure out why it can't be them.
Just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
It's true.
It's stick. She's stick.
Then you figured it out!
You thought that one would get pie me, huh? Well,
it was stick all along.
Yeah. I've got a mind like a glue trap. Anyway, so Adolin's like, the king died. My dad abdicated. Well, not abdicated. My dad resigns. And, like, the king's son is kidnapped or something. So I guess I'm the king. Cue the Lion King music.
Except he doesn't want to be king, so he has to do the refusal.
And also he's not prepared.
Right, so...
And he can't feel the love tonight. And he doesn't know what circles are.
No, he needs to Hakuna Matata, which means just don't think about it. Ignore all your problems. Eat bugs.
Is that what the whole just to cover all your bases is supposed to be?
Oh, yeah, I should make sure we get all of the important points. Harry Potter, Star Trek, Dungeons & Dragons, The Simpsons, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There you go. Now and we can...
You did a Futurama earlier, so...
Okay. And then, so apparently this Scritchy girl is Adolin's dead sword, but she doesn't seem that dead. I don't know. That's what Kaladin says. It's interesting that some people can sense what the beads are in the physical realm, but Adolin can't. And it's also interesting that when he tries to draw his shard blade, the scritchy eyes friend girl screams. I mean, if she's dead, Then how come she's in the cognitive realm? Dead people can't be in the cognitive realm, Kelshir.
Because cognitive realm is where Sprint lives.
And this one's not alive.
I should say where Sprint exists.
Okay.
And also, as far as we know, Adolin doesn't have access to Investiture. So why would he be able to sense anything in the cognitive realm?
Do you need Investiture to sense things in the cognitive realm? Maybe Shallan just doesn't know how it works.
Maybe. But Shallan and Kaladin are Radiants, and they can sense the beads, so...
But it's Kaladin's job to keep this place in check with his gloominess, or broodiness.
But what about its dreaminess?
Shallan tries to pretend that doesn't exist.
No, the dreaminess just keeps them distracted. The broodiness keeps them together.
And that's the end of this week's chapters. Dave's gone, play the thing.
Well, I guess we don't get a choice in this. Dave has left.
Wow. Okay, Dave's gone.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
Well said, Tor.
So, spoiler time!
Do you have spoilers for us, Tor?
So, how about one of them Warbreakers, huh?
Must be one of them.
It's Fafnir, right?
Who knows which one? Yeah, it's Fafnir. You know, I would expect Dave to actually bring up Fafnir. He liked Fafnir in the one chapter he has forgotten.
I was tempted to be like, yep, that's who it is. But then I was afraid that would hit too close to who it actually is. And that would lead him to the, but yeah.
Honestly, I was enjoying this because he was pulling out everyone. And he was putting a little bit of thought because, like, who do we know has power? But he still missed so much.
And when he was like, well, that's not the first Warbreaker person in this book.
I was laughing so hard I had to mute myself. It was just, he doesn't know. He thinks Nightblood's the first. He's so wrong.
But Nightblood isn't in this book yet. Next chapter.
Like, the fact that her hair is changing colors would be a huge sign. Like, who do we know has hair that just colors?
Yeah. Hoid.
Well, yeah. Talking Hoid, about.
Yes, well.
And she's done all the color metaphors, and her hair is changing colors. And maybe she's an Elantrian.
I mean, Dave has until the end of this part of the book, because we're going to get a bunch of Azure screen time. So if he doesn't figure it out now, he's just never figuring.
Oh, I thought she dipped like halfway through the part.
Yeah, well, sometime in the part where she actually decides to not stay with the group, which is sort of sad. She's only here for like, what, 20% of the book? Not even. Anyway. My chat was enjoying Dave's trying to guess who Azure is. I want to tell him so bad.
Oh, next week we can tell him it's Fafnir.
Yeah. All right.
Sounds good. So the...
Like when he guesses, like, is it Ciri? Is it Vivenna? Nope. Fafnir.
The fact that she uses Investiture, that is like the biggest sign that it's Vivenna. Because Ciri doesn't do any Investiture. Although, I mean, she doesn't have breaths.
That
maybe she could.
Super easily change between books,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I know. It could change, but we know it's Vivenna because she practiced with it. She has history. She's got to say something about Zaheel. She's got to, right? Like, she says something. There's some. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I remember that he says something about him. I don't remember if she calls him Vasher or Zahel or whatever.
I don't think she gives name Vasher.
Yeah, I don't remember.
We'll
find
either.
Out.
I think she just says that she's looking for someone doesn't name him.
But in one of their interludes, we had the first appearance of the Mink.
Yes, yes, we did.
Yeah, that guy's fun.
I think this was really just an introduction. Like, that's all this was. Like, it doesn't seem to really be important, aside from the Amaram units are jerks. I mean, typical Sadeus-type people.
I mean, We already knew that Amaram's forces were jerks, so...
Yeah, exactly. But that's all you're thinking at this. You're not realizing that the Herdazian is actually important, and he'll be important in the next book.
The fact that he's executing Alethi officers should come up later, similarly to how Adolin killing Sadeus should have come up later, but it just doesn't seem to matter next to all the other stuff going on.
Yeah, pretty much. There are bigger fish to fry.
Bigger pigs to claw.
Yeah. So there's that. You guys already mentioned we had Ash popping up. We tried to get him to figure out Yezrian, and he did guess the Windrunner one, but we didn't confirm it. So, as you said, we'll find out at the end of the book anyway. Yezrian dead.
He guessed the person who gave Zeth his sword, which it totally wasn't.
No, well, you knew what he meant, though. It was Zeth's sword, the Windrunner. Like, That part is correct. I think that's what he meant.
Oh, I know that's what he meant.
but you were choosing to interpret it. Yep, yep. That's why I'm like, nice deflection. Yeah. And of course, Azure is Vivenna. Apparently Dave is in disbelief that the Maya, who's the Spren, is actual sword and like why she would be here. So just as a quick recap, like Adolin has been taking steps, whether he knows it or not, he doesn't know. But he has been taking steps to bond his sword with Maya. And that's the reason why she follows him around in the cognitive realm. Like, she's a Deadeye in the cognitive realm, but she's been sort of following him where the sword is, where he is in relation to the physical realm. So that's why she's here at the Oathgate rather than just wherever Deadeyes just happen to hang out, which I think is a certain section that the Honor Spren have been putting them in. But she doesn't.
Well, like, some of them are hanging out there. It's like a hospital, a care home.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
But some of them have like friends and family that are taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high school gymnasium is where they're storing them.
So Deadeyes, it's weird because Spren being dead is also a weird thing. Technically, I think Syl was dead for a very short period of time in Words of Radiance. So Spren death is not permanent death, at least not the way they're discussing it. There are ways to permanently kill Spren in Cognitive Shadows, as we will find out at the end of this book. And also, I think when like Nightblood kills them, or even I think even when Syl like kills a Spren, it's actually the permanent kind, right?
I actually don't know if we ever like find out if the Spren that was torturing Gavinor that Kaladin stabbed with Sylphrena like was actually killed.
Yeah, maybe not. Or, like, but Nightblood
killed,
definitely
temporarily Spren killed, or just mildly inconvenienced. I don't know.
Nightblood does the permanent killing. He severs. Anyway, so the whole point is that Maya has been following Adolin around because she's bonded to him, and that's why we see her here. Yeah, and there's going to be more hints, and you know they're going to talk about it. This isn't like supposed to be a huge mystery, at least not beyond this chapter. So they're going to be talking about it and how she's acting and essentially why she's here, because it is a little bit weird, and that's because Adolin is special. Adolin is our special boy.
So special.
You know, can we talk about how Brandon Sanderson made us Adolin? Because I think he did a pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
He presented us with a himbo who poops his pants.
Like, I think in the first book, his idea of what Adolin was going to be was different than what he's become in these later books. Like, the fact that he's actually bonding with Ord and that sort of thing. Like, Adolin has taken on a lot more than I think Brandon was originally planning. And it's been really good for, like, the lore and world building and that sort of thing. So, Adolin, but especially in this chapter, though, you could see Adolin taking steps just to help Kaladin, because Kaladin needs someone to talk to. He's depressed. He's upset. Like, what happened in part three hit him hard. In general, like the people that he has connected with fighting amongst each other, killing each other, like that has taken a toll on him. The failure that he feels like that they've suffered, that is taking a toll. If we didn't have Adolin here, I don't think Kaladin would have did well.
Yeah, and I feel like Brandon portrays that very well, just the subtle descriptions of Kaladin. Like, you can tell that Kaladin has shut down and mm-hmm. that he's going through the motions. It's a hard read.
Yeah, so Adolin, sorry.
I would argue that Shallan is in just as bad of a place as Kaladin mentally right now. She's just better at covering it up.
Yes, very much.
So Adolin here, like, yeah, okay, he doesn't have any special powers. He can't sense beads, but he's still a super part of the party.
He has powers, the power of love and positive thinking.
There you go.
He has the power in Rhythm of War of ordering Kaladin to go out for drinks.
There you go.
Yeah, that happened.
The epigraph
power
for chapter
of love and positive.
The epigraph for chapter 89 is I forget who wrote this, but they're talking about the unmade. So this is where we actually get descriptions of what the different unmade are and what they do. Do you remember who wrote that, Mike?
I don't have it open in front of me, but
is it from Hesse's Mythica?
It might be. That sounds like
the,
it could
the
be
the book that Shallan was seeing very hard and found a copy of.
It was definitely from that book, but nobody knows who wrote it.
Okay.
Essie is a scholar and author on Roshar. She is author of Mythica, a work which investigates historical information about the Unmade and explores their characteristics. Selections of Mythica are used as the epigraphs for part 4 of Oathbringer. Tori has no. So that's cool. So we're going to actually get more information about what the different Unmade are. Right now, this is just a talking about the Nine Shadows and that sort of thing. Oh, wait. Ah, there was something I wanted to talk about.
Was it how the next chapter is the first episode of Police Academy 7, Roshar on Patrol?
Oh, it's the Skybreaker chapter, but no. I'll have to try to remember for next episode, but I wanted to talk about how the shadows head towards the lights in the cognitive realm, rather than, like, going the opposite way, and it's really weird. And I had a thought about what that meant, and I cannot remember it, and I apologize for important. I wanted to talk about it. That was like 2 months ago. I had like a shower thought, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the reason the shadows head towards the sun, towards the light source, it makes sense now. I don't remember. It bugs the heck out of me. I'll have to try to think about it.
Well, now it's going to bug us too, because I kind of want to know.
You know what? I'm willing to take this on trust that whatever Craig thought of in the shower is legit, it makes sense, and we can just assume that he said it all, and we went along with it.
I will think about it, guys. It's somewhere in my brain hole, somewhere. I just gotta dig it back up again, but there's something about it. It makes sense.
Craig? I wanna just say this. This might be the best theory you've ever had. It is absolutely airtight, my friend.
It's the Tenacious D tribute song. This isn't the greatest song. It's just a tribute. That's all I got, guys. I got a tribute to the theory that I had.
10 out of 10 theory, no notes.
Oh, no. Didn't write it down. Didn't need to. It was just a full on its
own. You need to take this to Reddit right now.
Guys, I had a great theory. There it is. Done.
Like, this is up there with Ishar is bad and Chanarach is Shallan's mom. Yeah.
Actually, good note. I have been reading things, like, when it comes to the book, especially how Nail's acting. Like, I have taken it as fact that Ishar is bad. Like, it makes so much sense that he's behind a lot of this crap that has happened. It's just so easy to just blame him. I don't know how accurate it is, and I feel bad for, like, because all we really know is that he was doing experiments on trying to drag Sprint from the cognitive realm into the physical, physically, and that was doing bad things. And he, of course, thought he could just, number one, he's God King, and what he says goes, but that's like sort of delusion being God King. That's all we've really seen of him, but it's just so easy. Like, it makes so much sense that Ishar is just behind all of this, and I basically take that for granted. It's such a good theory that it basically just...
I mean, I'm entirely on board.
Yeah. Like, I've only seen confirmation.
I mean, the dead, tortured Spren that we kind of seals the deal.
Yeah. But again, that could just be he's being delusional and he was trying to create Radiance because he thought they needed it. Like, it could have just been a madman trying to do these things, not... It does seem very calculated if he was making Nail do certain things, like killing Radiance, proto-Radiance, I should say, to prevent a desolation and the other things that we blamed on him. Like, those feel like they're calculated actions, not delusion of a madman.
Yeah, the torturing Espren, that I think is what's happening when he's actually, like, in full control of his faculties.
You think that's calculated, not... madness.
Yeah, that's not being 4,500 years old and not supposed to be. That's Ishar.
Anyway. I mean, it could be because he's 4,500 years old. Maybe he's over here like, well, I've tried everything else.
Cognitive shadows aren't supposed to live that long. According to Vasher, a very old living cognitive shadow.
Unless you can start storing your memories in things.
Which is what Hoyt does. But Hoyt's not a cognitive shadow. He still has to store his memories in Breathstone.
I mean, cognitive shadow, I think, is just the way you get to be that old if you're not Hoyt. But being that old is not good.
So do you guys think Vasher is storing his memories in Breaths?
He may not be old enough to need to yet.
We know how old he is, right? Like...
At the time of Warbreaker, he's 300. Like, okay. Been dead. That's for 300 years. Okay. And then we don't know what the time difference is between the end of Warbreaker and when he shows up in...
It shouldn't be that bad, because Vivenna is not that much older. Like, she's in her 30s.
Unless she has enough breaths to be immortal, and then it could be any amount of time.
That's true. She definitely has to have a fair amount of breaths, but... Okay, I mean, the point is, it's not 4,500, and we've seen what are happening to the Heralds. And meanwhile, the shard holders themselves are even older than that, and they go completely nutso. Like, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I really do think it's best now that all of the shard holders to pass on. They need to pass their shards on somebody else. I don't think any of them are sane enough to continue operating, and it's just going to keep getting worse. Like, I think all of the current shard holders, even the ones who've seen better, like Endowment, for example, but we've seen her writings, like to Hoyd, like she doesn't care what happens in the rest of the Cosmere. I think all of the shard holders are going nutso. They need to be replaced. And like, it just seems like we're sort of seeing that every single Cosmere book, they sort of end up getting replaced somehow, or they just get in splintered or destroyed in some way.
I mean, that may be like the end of the Cosmere, is setting up some sort of process to replace shards on the regular.
The problem is, who wants to give up that power? And how do you force someone to give up that power?
I mean, presumably the process will pick people who are on board with that. Like, you get to live for another, I don't know, 100 years with ultimate god power, and then you give it to someone else.
So, side question, was Adonalsium going nutso? Like, was he also some sort of cognitive shadow holding on to one shard with a lot of power?
I mean, presumably having all the different shards together provides some sort of a balancing effect, but, I mean, yeah, definitely possible.
Yeah, I mean, normally you don't have 16 people conspiring to kill you.
17, at least.
and unless you're some kind of nutso.
Yeah, I think maybe that's sort of the plot of Dragonsteel. Like, he was, you know, a being that had ultimate power, but he was also going crazy. Despite having a balance, he still was psycho, and Hoyd and crew decided to deal with that.
I mean, okay, Tori, let's be fair. Having anywhere from 4 to about 20 people all banding together to murder God is the plot of every Final Fantasy.
Yeah, everyone.
So you think the end game is that you will just have individual shards that were held by people?
I think that's likely, based on what we've seen so far. Like, I know a lot of people want to see Adonalsium be, like, put back together, but I just don't feel like that's likely at this point.
Okay, that's fair. Because I was going to say, like, I think one of the valid endgame scenarios is that Adonalsium's, people feel like there's a lot of hints towards that. Like, they're like, it could be Dalinar, it could be Sazed. There's just have the individual shards behold, or we could have an alternate reality where the shards are all splintered, and in which case we have no one holding them, but I don't think that's very stable. Like, okay, so the reason things are so bad on Elantris is because Odium shoved all of the shard, the investiture related to the shards, into the cognitive realm. Like, that's part of the reasons why it's so hard to travel around there and that sort of thing, because Aeon Dor, the power of the investiture, is just sitting in the cognitive realm, so it's very hard to travel there. But we've also seen weird things on, like, Threnody, which is essentially remnants of the battle between Odium and Ambition, and that has done some weird things. So, but yeah, at the same time, we look at Roshar, and, you know, Honor has been splintered, but it doesn't seem as bad. Like, the Sprin, and maybe it's because they're sapient entities, the Sprint seem to be doing a little bit better, but for all we know, that is temporary and things are going to start getting worse, a la Cognitive Shadows breaking down and getting worse over time.
Yeah,
it's just not as stable.
Splintering all the shards feels to me like the bad ending.
I just realized that, Mike and Tori, I think the reason Cognitive Shadows have so much trouble is because they're cognitive entities. So essentially, while they manifest themselves in the physical realm, they don't have that much connection, or their spirit web is sort of missing. Like, there's basically some strands that are missing. Whereas a regular person, they have stuff that exists in the physical, cognitive, and spiritual realm. Like, they are a complete person, and that's very stable. The reason Sprin want to come to the physical realm is because they get that too. They exist in the physical realm, but they're also cognitive entities, and they have a connection and a bond that helps in the spiritual realm. So they basically get all three. Spryn want to continue to exist and be stable, and the stability because they're in all three realms. I'll keep working on that. What do you guys think?
Not nearly as good as your other theory this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's going to top that.
Okay, I'll work on it. All right, that's all I have, though.
Okay. Mike? I have nothing. I'm tired, and I hurt.
Okay. Well, I say we call it there.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Bye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.